This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Paul Wolf, Senior Policy Specialist at the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, an alliance of grassroots organizations that advocates for federal policy reform to advance the sustainability of food systems, natural resources, and rural communities. Paul Wolf is here to tell us about the coalition's policy platform for the 2018 Farm Bill. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you for having me.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition?
Sure, happy to. Like you mentioned, we are a national organization made up of over 100 organizations across the country that are community-based, farmer-based, in local food, national organizations that are interested in sustainable agriculture and how we address that through federal policy. We don't work on state issues, but exclusively at the federal level, and we are getting ready to start working on probably the biggest federal policy vehicle impacting sustainable agriculture, and that is the next Farm Bill.
What does the Farm Bill do, and how significant is it for our agriculture and food systems in the U.S.?
The Farm Bill has the biggest impact. It is done every 5 years, or about every 5 years, with a five-year duration, and impacts all aspects of our food and agriculture system. I think one thing that's very important to point out is that when we think about this, that it has a couple of main parts. The one that people may not know as much about or know that it makes up such a big part of it, but it's the SNAP program, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Formerly, a lot of people know it as food stamps. It actually makes up 80% of funding and spending within the Farm Bill. So it is the biggest part of it. You know, it's called the Farm Bill, and people often think about agriculture policy, but it's important to remember that SNAP makes up 80% of the spending, and that amounts to over, I think, nearly $400 billion over the life of the Farm Bill. So it is a big chunk of funding. The rest, the other 20% or so, goes to everything else, and that includes rural development, trade programs, food safety programs, programs supporting local food, conservation work, energy programs, forestry, credit. So it covers a lot of different things that hit every aspect of life in urban areas and rural areas, in the trade sector that was very important in the Northwest, and all of that. So it's the Farm Bill, but it covers a lot more than just the Farm Bill.
In the implementation of the previous 2014 Farm Bill, what were the biggest successes for sustainable agriculture?
Well, there were a lot of things I think that we did well in. You know, it's a little bit of a mixed bag for agriculture in the last Farm Bill. We had some things that didn't work out so well, but there were a lot of wins. And maybe I'll start with those. We had renewed and increased investment in beginning farmer and rancher programs and programs to support the next generation of farmers. There was expansion and renewed investment in local and regional food systems, healthy food access, and a lot of those programs that support those regional food systems that are so important and are such a big growing part of our food system. It also had some good impacts in the conservation sector. We were able to have conservation compliance reattached to crop insurance. Conservation compliance is a basic standard of conservation that all farmers have to undertake in order to access federal support programs. Often people talk about crop subsidies and for direct subsidy support, and then crop insurance subsidy support, which helps farmers pay part of their crop insurance bill. And in exchange for that, we're able to put in place these basic set of regulations to try to prevent farming in wetlands and to prevent runoff. So that was a good thing. Some of the not so good things, some of the provisions related to preventing the largest farms from getting unlimited subsidies were removed and not retained in the bill, even though they passed in both the House and the Senate. And they also removed, and we weren't able to get in some provisions on crop insurance to make sure that the biggest farms don't have unlimited subsidies. Currently, a farm of any size, whether it's 500 acres or 30,000 acres, you know, taking up an entire county, are able to receive unlimited subsidies on their crop insurance. And additionally, another very important one is that the bill cut, you know, $6 billion from conservation programs that are important. It was the first time since conservation was added to the Farm Bill in 1985 of that funding was actually decreased for conservation programs. So we are very concerned about that and are looking to help try to reverse some of that in the next Farm Bill.
How did you go about developing your policy platform for the upcoming 2018 Farm Bill? Who was involved?
So we just released last week our agenda for the 2018 Farm Bill, which is available on the NSAC website. And that is a document that covers a wide range of subjects that we think are important to sustainable agriculture covered by the Farm Bill. And that was the culmination of a two-year process where we held listening sessions at farmer meetings and farmer conferences across the country that usually take place during the winter. We had multiple meetings with our members and listening sessions with our members and phone calls with our members, and taking all of the ideas, those 100-plus members plus farmers that we held meetings with, to develop and filter through this agenda for the 2018 Farm Bill that really encompasses all of the things that will put us on a path to a more sustainable agriculture and food system future.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Paul Wolf, Senior Policy Specialist at the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. Our topic is the Coalition's policy platform for the 2018 Farm Bill. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. Would you now give an overview of the Coalition's recommendations for the upcoming Farm Bill?
Sure. So we have six areas that we're covering this year in the Farm Bill, and I'll kind of take them one by one. Our first is local and regional food systems. This encompasses a whole host of ideas and programs to promote local and regional food systems around the country. These are farmers markets, food hubs, direct farmer to the public, direct sales that are kind of a growing part of agriculture and have the ability to help farmers diversify their streams and also reduce reliance on imports and kind of build up local food systems that put more money in the farmer's pocket, and that is actually being implemented already through the Local Food and Regional Market Supply Act, also known as FARM, that was recently introduced in both the House and the Senate. It is H.R. 3941 in the House, introduced by Congresswoman Pingree and Congressman Fortenberry, and S. 1947, introduced by Senator Brown in the Senate from Ohio. So that bill, which is the implementation of this agenda item, includes increased funding and reauthorization of the value-added producer grant program, which helps farmers start on-farm businesses to turn their crops and their livestock into products that they sell directly to the public, and then also reauthorizes and moves forward the farmers market and local food promotion program by creating public and private partnerships and funding mechanisms to help food hubs and farmers markets get off the ground that help farmers connect with consumers and to sell their products directly and in the local community. And finally, it also really focuses on food safety. The Food Safety Modernization Act was passed back in 2010, and it's just starting to come into implementation now. And this is a rule and a law that was passed to make food safer, but it also has barriers and will make it in some ways harder for local and regional food producers to access markets and ensuring that they have the ability to access those markets. We need to ensure they have the food safety training and assistance that they need. The second part is conservation programs, and this is really focusing on three areas, which is working lands programs, we call them. So your environmental quality incentives program and the conservation stewardship program, which provide assistance to farmers to implement conservation practices on their farms and ranches that help water quality, that support wildlife, support pollinator habitat, support all these things that are very important, you know, especially in Washington State and the Pacific Northwest. Water quality issues related to salmon are very important, and these are the kind of programs that help with that. We're also promoting implementation of some mechanisms to measure and evaluate those programs and make sure that we're getting the outcomes that we want. And then, as I mentioned before, those basic conservation requirements, we talked about compliance and ensuring that in exchange for the federal dollar and the federal tax dollars going to farmers, that they are undertaking some basic conservation measures to ensure that they, you know, are reducing soil erosion and improving water quality. Seeds and breeds is the next one we're calling it, which is focusing on seed breeding and making sure that farmers, especially organic farmers, farmers growing wheat and rice and other crops that are not as widely grown as corn and soybeans, have access to the seeds that are regionally appropriate and appropriate for the system that they are working in. There is only one public university-employed sweet corn breeder left in the country. Our public seed breeders are retiring, and we need to find some way to help replace them and ensure that there's public access to seeds, and we're not abdicating all seed production to private companies. And the last is crop insurance modernization. So the federal crop insurance program spends about $8 billion a year on subsidies to crop insurance companies and to farmers to implement that program. And we want to make sure that farmers have access to that program, that the exchange for those subsidies, they're implementing basic conservation practices, that the largest farms, the mega farms, don't have unlimited subsidies, that millionaires and billionaires are not getting subsidies, and that there's transparency in the system to ensure that we know where those subsidies are going and that the companies are using them efficiently to deliver the program to farmers. So those are the main five areas. We also have a sixth area that's kind of a catch-all where we're looking at issues related to competition in the livestock sector, ensuring that the independent family farms can make a living in livestock when there's only four companies controlling the vast majority of the cattle markets and chicken markets, and also in the seed and input industries. So that's kind of the main areas of our platform.
Would you speak also about your support for beginning farmers and ranchers?
We're also focusing on beginning farmers, and this is a really great venue to talk about this because Washington State is actually one of the top states for a couple different programs that are important. So in the beginning farmer, one of the main things we're looking at is the beginning farmer and rancher development program. It's the only program within USDA that is exclusively focused on training the next generation of farmers. You know, everybody talks about that the average age of a farmer today is around 59 years old, and farmers are getting older. They're aging out. We're going to transition millions of acres of land to their children or to other people over the next few years. As those farmers get older, there's going to be a lot more land moving around. And so how do we make sure that we transfer that knowledge and develop those new generation of farmers? And one of those ways is the Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program. And why this is so important in this next farm bill is because that program actually stopped working and was basically gone for a year in 2013, and no farmers were getting trained that year because the Congress delayed passing the farm bill and did not fund it for that 1 year. So at the end of September next year in 2018, when the current farm bill expires, if there is not something in place to replace it, this program will shut down and will not have funding and will be in that same situation. And we don't want to see that. The other program that's really interesting in Washington State is something we call the Conservation Reserve Program Transition Incentives Program, or CRP-TIP. Washington State is actually the number one state for this program. And what it is a program that helps transition acreage to beginning farmers and helps with that kind of transition process. The Conservation Reserve Program is a land conservation program that actually pays farmers to take land out of production. And it's designed, you know, to help with wildlife habitat and with other programs, but it only lasts 10 years. The contracts for the program are 10 years, so it's a conservation program that has a limited time. And as farmers come out of that 10 years, because the program has been cut back in recent years, you know, that $6 billion cut to the conservation program I mentioned, a lot of farmers are not able to re-enroll, or they want to retire from farming. They had that farm plan for 10 years, and they're planning to retire or already have retired. So what this does is it tries to connect beginning farmers that are looking for land with retiring farmers, and it gives them extra payments of those CRP payments to transition that land to a new farmer, and it's been very popular in Washington State. It's one of the number one states for it. The other thing to mention is really important in the Northwest is that these beginning farmer programs actually have really focused on refugee and immigrant farmers and have helped those farmers and those people that in their homelands were farmers and have come here and wanted to farm and grow products that they had back home that for new markets here. It has also helped them. So we're focusing on the beginning farmer portion, and hopefully we will be soon seeing some bills being introduced on that subject.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Paul Wolf, Senior Policy Specialist at the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. Our topic is the Coalition's policy platform for the 2018 Farm Bill. We've begun alluding a bit to this already, but what features of your 2018 Farm Bill agenda are most relevant for sustainable agriculture in Washington State?
You know, I think some of the pieces I've already talked about are really relevant. I think the Local and Regional Market Supply Act, the Farm Act that I mentioned, that's already been introduced is important. You know, Washington State has an already, I think, robust kind of regional food system. You have lots of farmers markets in the Puget Sound regional area, with farmers up in the Skagit Valley and eastern Washington being able to sell into those markets. But there are still more things that could be done, and that's what we're talking about in this Farm Bill, is building on the investment and continuing the investments that were made in the 2014 Farm Bill. A lot of these programs have not been around a long time and, you know, were greatly expanded in the 2008 and 2014 Farm Bills, and we want to continue and expand those. And as I mentioned, a lot of these programs, if the Farm Bill is not reauthorized by the end of September 2018, they will go away. So the Value-Added Producer Grant Program might help a farm in the Skagit Valley that is growing cucumbers or growing some other product that they want to turn into pickles, or if they want to turn wheat into flour. This would help them write a business plan and develop that product and figure out how they're going to bring it to market so that they can go out and purchase that equipment and make that investment and make sure that there's a market there for it. And it can even help you after they get that thing started. And then the Farmers Market and Local Food Promotion Program, as I mentioned, helps with food hubs and farmers markets and establishing those in new places and kind of moving from the next level from, you know, there are a lot of farmers markets out there in the Puget Sound region, but starting to move into wholesale and grocery stores and getting those aggregation points, those food hubs, where multiple farmers can bring their produce and their products together to fill the needs of restaurants and grocery stores. And then, you know, as I mentioned too, is the food safety. So those are kind of the local regional food, beginning farmers. As I mentioned, the Beginning Farm and Rancher Development Program, you know, spent over $3.5 million in Washington to help beginning farmers. It's one of the top 10 states for that. The CRP TIP, actually Washington is number one in using that program to help transition that CRP land to beginning farmers and to new farmers. And then conservation programs. The Conservation Stewardship Program, it enrolls 10 million acres a year, and the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, which helps farmers put in conservation practices. And I think why it's really important in Washington is that EQIP is one of the top programs for helping put in practices that improve water quality and prevent those nitrates and phosphates and other pollutants from getting into the water supply, which can be impacting on salmon and in the Puget Sound water quality and Columbia River water quality for salmon, but also for shellfish. It can help farmers fence off creeks and streams to prevent cows from getting into the water supply. It also helps with mechanisms, lagoons and tanks and stuff to handle dairy farm waste to prevent it from just running off onto the land. And it also provides soil health and runoff prevention to farmers that are all engaged in the local regional food system with high tunnels that help extend seasons and have a lot of soil health benefits. So that's the EQIP program, the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, and the Conservation Stewardship Program, which also helps farmers implement cover crops and other things that prevent runoff and improve soil health and help water quality, which I think is really important in Washington State these days.
Overall, nationwide, how large a contribution have programs in the past Farm Bills made to promoting conservation?
Well, I think that they've had a very important role. The challenge here as we approach this next Farm Bill is that since 1985 through the 2012 Farm Bill, we've made an increasing investment in conservation programs, but that the 2014 Farm Bill, this last Farm Bill, cut conservation programs by $6 billion, and that includes the Conservation Stewardship Program, which is a whole farm conservation program. You enroll your whole farm, you do a suite of enhancements, they're called, that, you know, whether that's cover cropping, buffer strips, pollinator habitat, all of these kinds of things. There's lots and lots of different practices that they have implemented, and the EQIP program, which I just talked about, and then other kinds of programs that look on a regional and basin level at ways to improve water quality, the regional conservation partnership program, which does public-private partnership on a watershed level program. So these are, you know, really great programs that have been improved over the years and are helping us improve water quality. But where we are right now is those programs, we have a whole, in our platform, we have a whole series of tweaks and changes to improve them. But fundamentally, we need to remain committed to them by reauthorizing them and considering how we address the funding issues for those programs. So I think there's been a lot of progress made with these programs, and they are working, but we also still do have dead zones in the Gulf of Mexico and in Puget Sound and Hood Canal, and we still have these issues that need to be addressed, and that makes the Farm Bill so important to maintain our commitment to all those programs, especially the Conservation Stewardship Program, which has come under threat in the past and will likely come under a threat again in the next Farm Bill debate.
What will be the key challenges in having the coalition's agenda incorporated into the 2018 Farm Bill?
Well, I think there's a couple of those. You know, obviously, we have a tight budget situation here at Congress, here in Washington, D.C. There is not a lot of extra money to go around, and trying to make those adjustments and those trade-offs about the importance. Are we able to find money to support local and regional food systems and conservation programs, you know, by doing what we can to ensure that the largest farms and corporations and the biggest farms out there are not able to receive unlimited crop insurance subsidies, and that there are workable and real payment limitations on crop subsidy programs? We think if we do that, we can find an equilibrium to support these important programs. But the funding is a big one. We also have a political dynamic where we don't know what the president's priorities are in this Farm Bill yet. They have not weighed in on what they want to do. So I think that, you know, there are some challenges in money and moving the policy in a more sustainable direction. We have a lot of great champions here in Congress on both sides of the aisle that are interested in more sustainable agriculture, but we have to address some of the entrenched conventional way of thinking. You know, this is the 21st century, climate change is a fact, and how does that impact agriculture, and not have a view that's looking at the past but looking towards the future.
What is the process and timeline for the 2018 Farm Bill?
So the current Farm Bill expires at the end of September 2018, and Congress must pass a replacement for that, or we will revert back to 1930s and 1940s permanent law. That was a specter that we were looking at during the last Farm Bill debate. The Farm Bill is unique in that when it expires, and we go back to these old permanent laws that don't even acknowledge the existence of certain crops that we grow today, because they go back before soybeans and some other things were grown widely in the United States. So Congress needs to act by then, either to extend the bill or pass a new Farm Bill. And they're just starting to have that debate. This summer, the House and Senate both held a series of hearings and listening sessions around the country to hear from farmers about what's important and what they'd like to see. We are in the process now of working with members of Congress to get their priorities introduced as bills and to start having that debate about what should be in the Farm Bill. The House has indicated that they are moving a bit more quickly and would like to have a draft Farm Bill in the Agriculture Committee for consideration sometime this fall or early in the year. The Senate, not far as long in that process, so we're looking at early next year before we have a bill. So what happens is the House and Senate Ag Committee leadership comes up with something they call the chairman's mark, which is kind of the base bill. They would then have a markup in each committee where members have the opportunity to offer amendments with their priorities, and they have those added to the bill. Then sometime next year, that bill would go to the House and Senate floors for consideration, and more amendments and more voting. And then they would reconcile the differences of those two bills, and then have one more vote in the House and Senate to pass that same version in both, and then send it off to the president, hopefully sometime before the end of September next year. So we're kind of in the middle of the start of the process. The race hasn't begun yet, but we're getting the horses in the starting gate.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I'd like to leave them with that the Farm Bill impacts everybody, and that it's important for you to think about how this program impacts your lives, whether it's through food assistance programs, through export marketing programs, through rural development programs, through energy programs, through regional food system programs. You know, this bill, the USDA is kind of the Swiss Army knife of agencies, which means that the Farm Bill is kind of the Swiss Army knife of federal legislation. It's not just a rural bill. It's not just the farmer bill. It's not just a food stamp bill. You know, it affects everybody's lives about what you eat, and everybody eats, so everybody's impacted by the Farm Bill. So to think about that, and you know, as this debate goes forward, visit our website, visit other people's websites, and think about how you can contact your legislature and show support for the provisions that you are interested in.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
You were just listening to Paul Wolf, Senior Policy Specialist at the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. For more information, check on the web at sustainableagriculture.net. Sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on demand, and then podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and at kexp.org.